Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for watching. Yeah, it's not Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber. This is buddy Jack Silverman over there working on with him today. SP Futures up 18. Dow Futures up 164. And NASDAQ Futures up 42. Buy the dip. Fools were down 50 yesterday and crept back to being not only 37 on the close. And now this morning we had Trump saw his policies having his market down. And he runs out this morning and says, oh, don't worry. We're going to, when we cut the deal, we'll let Huawei back into the mix, maybe, and all of a sudden we're back up the other way today. So it's a very odd situation. Never seen anything quite like it, but it continues to roll on. Roll on, as they say. Theresa May says she's going to quit on June 7th. So there you go. Kevin, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing okay. You know, I got to say, I do really love our Friday intro segment. Cuts. They are the most fun.
What are they? Why? What? Which one do you like the best?
Well, I'm always a fan of Pulp Fiction. So
yes.
I don't remember asking you a damn thing.
That's exactly right. What? So I want to do a little bit of kind of odd. Well, I say odd sports stuff here. Stuff that maybe people don't know. Yesterday we were talking a little bit about a lot of stuff that some of the regulators are doing to people that maybe most people don't know. And I'm sure in their industries, they could probably tell you and me what's going on with some of the regulators that maybe we don't know. But anyway, I was talking to your evil twin, Beldo, this week, which I, of course, could never do. He's a friend of mine for about 40 years.
And why would you not talk to Beldo?
Oh, I always
why should you never talk to Beldo? Come on.
I should always talk to Beldo, because he's like, if Kevin was Mike Royko, he'd be your Slats Grobnik. He'd be your neighborhood, you know.
Or I'd be his Slaps
Grobnik. Or something.
Slats Grobnik.
Yeah, Slats. It was used to be a nickname for
you. Not to
be
confused with Slits. Do you know who Slits was in Royko Land?
No, who's that?
Well, it was always on his Cub quiz, and it turns out it was a trick question. There was no person named Slits. However, when Leo DeRocher used to do the commercials where he'd sit around and tell a story about the old days, and then he'd go, it was a Schlitz commercial.
Schlitz
beer, and he would go, okay, okay, guys, how about another Schlitz?
Well, a guy with a New York accent, is impossible to say Schlitz. They can't do the CH. It's an L.
I think it's a South Side thing, too, so it's well in Chicago.
Could very well. So it's like if you're from Boston, there's no R. Pack your car, there's no R sound. They don't learn how to, they don't have an R anywhere. Right?
So at any rate, yeah. So there was also Slits in Royko lore.
Well, two things that he came up with, and I don't know that our listeners. Well, we've from time to time we've alluded to this, for lack of a better term, secondary recruiting that's going on with a lot of the people. Just kind of bring people up to speed, and this is part of it. This isn't all of it. But if you have a student athlete. And your son or daughter gets headed someplace, more if your son's playing football probably, but either they're trying to get you to somehow get the kid to graduate in December so he can start Notre Dame, Michigan, wherever it happens to be, in the second semester, so he essentially gets a leg up. So if they expect him to play as a freshman.
He gets to participate in spring football.
Right, then. He gets to participate in spring football. Well, then he maybe gets a week or two home, Kevin. And they're pretty much all requiring summer school, which for somebody who's maybe, you know, let's say on the edge of students who would get in just academically, and it's been very nice, having a little head start probably isn't the worst thing. So now that you're going to summer school, so you've got a semester in summer school, and now even if you take only 9 hours, or, you know, at least take 15, 15 gets you to graduation sort of on time. But you can stay eligible with 9. So you could take 18, for instance, in the second semester, in 12 in the first, and still get you there, which a lot of guys used to do in our day, Kevin. I think you can stay eligible. And anyway, the bottom line is, if you start the semester early and you go all summers, probably by the end of junior year, certainly by the time you're December of senior year, you've got more than enough credits to graduate. And if you're doing okay, and if you're redshirted at all, you're essentially graduating with an eligibility as a junior, correct? Or able to graduate,
yep,
most of the time.
Well, yeah, you have junior eligibility, and you're able to graduate.
Right, and some kids who are, I won't say the kids that are there and actually would be there normally, not even being an athlete. If you got a semester head start and you've got 3 summers to work on, you almost can make, you pretty much can do the year anyway. So if you're a good student, even if you're not redshirted, you're probably ready to start after your junior year. You're ready to graduate because you've got the semester starts, so that's 1. Then you got 3 summers. Even if you do 2 classes a summer, that's another 6. That's another semester, right? So if you're a good student and you don't cut back in the fall, you're ready to go after 3 years anyway. Even if you're not registered.
Yeah, and there are a number of athletes who will do that.
Right. So you've got that going, and you've got a hard cap on the amount of people you can have on scholarship now of 85 people, which seems like a lot. But it used to be, what, 100? It was 100 when we were in school.
Yeah, there was actually a time when it was unlimited, too.
I thought it was, I seem to recall, well, I think I'm going to, before, I think in my time, which was 2 years, more than years, I think the limit was 30 a year, but only 100 total.
Could have been.
And then it's gone from wherever to wherever, but Beldo tells me.
So now it's 25 a year and 85 total.
So Beldo tells me that, A, not very many schools are struggling to get 85 guys on scholarship. A lot of schools are. I mean, now when you drop down from the top 20, having 85 scholarship kids is sometimes difficult. But the other thing is this thing called gray shirting, which I knew nothing about, of course, where if you have 86, essentially the 86 kid, if you've got a good enough program, and I won't say if he's getting paid, although it certainly entered my mind immediately, say Alabama or Notre Dame's got their first one this year, supposedly. If the kid allegedly pays his own way to a junior college, like nearby, as soon as somebody else drops off, you can pop him on. Isn't that the drill, Kevin?
Well, it's either that or you pay your own way and basically you come out to practice with the team and then next year, and then in the spring, you're fully on scholarship, and you do spring football leading into the following season.
Does anybody? But if you think that these kids
and there are other variations, and they have different colors associated with them, where you might just not enroll at all. You might stay home and get a job or something like that, and then enroll in the second semester. There's just different ways that they do it.
The thought of these kids actually pawning up the money for this junior college somehow, if there's somebody Alabama wants, if that's a problem, there's got to be an alumni somewhere. Just, I mean, I'm not accusing anybody. Just,
well, there are some rules about, you know, if somebody's going to pay for the local community college. I don't know how you track that, but when an athlete enrolls at Alabama who was recruited, that's considered a scholarship player, even if you wind up not, you know, if it winds up being a personal scholarship. So there's some ways that gets counted.
I have a question I thought of on the way in the middle of the downpour. If somebody shows up for football, because I was talking about to one of the listeners, 85 might seem like a lot. Well, hell, if a pro team's only got 53. But the pro team can bring people in during the year if somebody gets hurt or whatever. Where And plus,
they can do that, and the other part is that they don't turn over 25% of their roster typically every year.
Well, plus they also don't, there's out of the 85, even in the really good schools, unless you are one of the real nasty coaches that can't wait to get some kid off the thing who's never going to play for you. I'll say the charitable schools, I would probably include Michigan, Notre Dame, Stanford. There's probably 30 people on there that are never going to play in a game. They just didn't grow. They didn't this or they didn't that, right? Or they got hurt and they never came. I mean,
if it isn't 30, it's 15 to 20, and maybe it is 30. Whatever it is, you're right. There's a significant number, and if you made a commitment to them that your scholarship would be good for 4 years, then some will run them off. But for the most part, they'll honor the scholarship, and you are a practice player.
Yeah, and I guess I'm going. But now with this new secondary recruiting, Beldo tells me there's almost like 300 people in this transfer portal. First of all, what's the transfer portal?
Well, the transfer portal is just they've tried to organize how transfers work. So you put your name in this quote portal, and then it's available to anyone who wants to recruit you. That's all it is. It's just the NCAA rather than having it be kind of an open season, an ungoverned, nobody even watching it type of situation.
Back up a second.
They tried instead to make it so that you can you put your name in and then everything is tracked just like it would be, maybe even more detail than the high school recruiting.
Every question leads to another question. What power left, for those that maybe don't know, how much is the NCAA even in charge of this crap? I mean, these conferences seem more powerful than the NCAA. For those of you that probably don't know, in fact, most of our listeners probably do, doesn't like 90% of the NCAA's money come from the NCAA basketball tournament?
Yeah.
And, I mean, what control do they really have over these football conferences? I mean, they have alleged control, but, I mean,
It's an interesting dynamic because ultimately the football conferences can all just give them the finger and go their way. So they want to regulate it. By the same token, they don't want to overdo it and annoy them. And it's really kind of an interesting dynamic if you just look at it. Forget whether it's healthy or good or anything like that, and just look at it.
Just observe it.
The dramatic part of it. It's kind of fun to watch sometimes. What's happening, Tom, is that more players are exercising their free agency rights, for lack of a better way to put it. So they're saying when I land at a college and it's not fitting my needs, whatever that may be. It may be the need for playing time. It may be the way you're coached. It may be the opportunity that you see down the road based on who else has been recruited. There's lots of really good reasons for an athlete to want to transfer. And now, more than ever, the athletes are looking and saying, hey, I want to explore my options here. And I don't think that's a bad thing. It brings a little chaos to the sports, and it's a little bit difficult for the coaches, but tough luck for the coaches. The game has been so rigged in favor of the schools for so long, and it's still transferring is a challenging thing to do because you have to sit out a year, and so you're sitting out a year with no guarantees, and if you ever want to transfer again, well, good luck with that, because people who transfer twice don't fare very well. There's a lot going on. With the exception of the graduate transfers, there are people out there in the world who will transfer someplace, sit out their year, then play, they graduate, and then they can transfer again as graduate transfers without sitting out a year the second time.
Well, if you look at, somebody asked me last week, I was doing a stint on Chicago radio, and they said, why do you do stocks and jacks? And I said, well, it's because it's interesting. When people are involved in anything, it turns into the same subject, right? Because people are people in whatever they do. this, but the encroachment, for lack of a better term, Kevin, in this whole area, I'm going to say 15, 20 years ago, it was a few people who graduated and still wanted to play another year, and I'm going to say the number was 15, 20 a year. That even found it, and it actually was somewhat, shall we say, policed, because the idea is for you to go to grad school somewhere else. You supposedly, that school couldn't have the same grad course that you were trying to take. Which, of course, if you transfer from Wisconsin to Michigan State, the thought of one of those schools having a grad course that the other one doesn't is such BS that, you know, come on. I mean, we're too old to be screwed by a kitten, as they say. So that part of it went away, right? So now more people are graduating earlier, which is okay. I mean, it's not a bad thing. They're graduating. But now the latest is, if your coach, for whatever reason, gets a job for more money, if somebody grabs Kelly out of Notre Dame and says, we're going to give you $15 million a year to go to, you know, wherever, SMU or someplace, every Notre Dame player now on scholarship can leave and is eligible the next year, correct?
I don't think that's entirely true.
I think
you still have to go get a waiver, and while waivers happen, it is neither predictable. Frankly, I don't understand how the NCAA grants waivers. Sometimes I think it's just like they throw a bunch of marbles in a hat, and if you get the black one, tough luck, and if you get the white one, you get your waiver. It also depends on where you are in the process. So somebody who might have signed a letter of intent in February and then the coach leaves afterwards, they're pretty inclined to let them out of that. But somebody who's been in the program a couple of years, unless there's probation involved or something like that, and the coach gets fired over a scandal, unless that's the case, I think they're subject to the same transfer as everybody else.
We'll have to discuss this with your evil twin, because... As I'm saying, the encroachment is coming. It used to be that if you got recruited by Matty Weber and all of a sudden you show up at school and Matty Weber's gone, fired or whatever, that used to be an automatic, I won't say automatic, Kevin, pretty much automatic, you could go somewhere else because the guy who recruited you is gone, correct?
Yeah, most of the time. There was a time when you couldn't even, you know, they wouldn't even let you out of that and said, well, you're choosing the school, not the coach. But, yes, that's been true for a while.
Well, your evil twin claims that it has now been expanded to whenever the coach leaves, for whatever reason. And because he mentioned a whole bunch of these guys that are in the portal from like a couple of schools where the coach has changed.
Heck, there's one basketball school where the coach changed and 11 guys went in the portal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I think it was like Missouri, Kansas City or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's, I think that is the new rule.
But that doesn't mean that they won't have to sit out a year.
We'll have to check this out. Your evil twin claims that they do. They don't have to.
They're going to have. Again, it'll be handled case by case. They'll have to apply for waivers.
Well, plus, you're home at a place. You've got friends. You've played 3 years. Just because the coach leaves, you might like the new guy better, or the assistant coach they promote better. It's not like every single person is going to dash just because the coach leaves. Probably half the people don't even like the guy. You know, so it's not like
I was going to say some people are going to be happy.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's... But I mean, it's if this was the market, you'd say it's only going in one direction, Kevin. And 20 years from now, there's going to be recruiting after freshman year. I mean, and then guys are going to be able to dash. I mean, it's kind of heading that way. Now, whether it gets stopped along the way, what I'm saying is that I don't see any year now where there's going to be less guys in the portal than the year before. The direction it's heading.
Yeah, it probably not. I don't see the trend changing, but you never know how it might settle down. Part of it is that right now it's new, it's easier, and I think you will see a lot of students who just want to test the waters, but sooner or later, you know, some of them are going to find anyway that the grass isn't always greener. So, you know, that understanding will come along as well.
Well, the latest, but this again, I'm getting this from my man who has his evil sources. If Kevin O'Neill's at Notre Dame and he decides he doesn't like Kelly so much, and you put yourself in this transfer portal, say you've graduated, say you haven't, The only way you go back to your school now is to get asked back. Is that true? You're gone once you're in there. They don't have to ask you back.
You know, that's a good question, Tom, and I can't give you a definitive answer. I don't know that, although there are, I know of many cases where the athletes have said, you know, I'm thinking about it, so I want to test the waters, but I don't necessarily want to leave. I know of cases like that in basketball, so that may be because of the relationship with the coach, that, or it may be and the good graces of the coach, or it may be that it isn't true that you can return. I would imagine, though, that at some point you have to be able to say, I'm leaving or I'm staying, because coaches need to know what they have to do for recruiting.
Well, what in my day, the whole idea was, once the circus, and it is a circus, on recruiting these kids, takes place, you have your national signing day, then that's supposed to be it. Yet obviously, people being people, if there's a really good basketball player on Indiana's team, and my son or daughter has a friend who has a friend that's a team manager, and saw the coach and the player have a blow up on the sidelines, the whole world's going to know about it, even in practice, Kevin. And now, if I'm another coach, do I get to make that call and say, "Hey, Joe, I hear you're graduating this year. Plus, I also hear you don't like that bleep you're playing for. How about after you graduate, come play for me next year? And by the way, there's this much in it for you." Are those calls, now that part's not legal, I know, but are those calls now legal or not?
No.
Yet they're being made all over the place. I mean, communications take place.
Are there back channel communications? Oh yeah, always have been.
Now what is there some way of legally talking to the kid if he's under scholarship somewhere else?
Not really, no.
Until he's in the portal.
Until he's in the portal.
Yet,
because yeah, and think about that. It's essentially like a pro sports league's tampering rules. You can't do that. And I think most coaches, not all coaches, but most coaches will respect that line, even if there is some back channel friend of a friend stuff. They're not going to take it very far because they don't want it to happen to themselves either. And there is a certain honor among the thieves.
Well, but the reason where I'm going with this is economically, if you are, you know, pick a school, Sidewash State, and you've got everybody coming back, and you've got yourself a team that you think is going to challenge either in your conference championship or someplace, it's going to be a big money year for the school, and all of a sudden, your star halfback, you know, is helping his buddy move and stumbles and breaks his ankle on the steps, you're sitting there going, "I need a halfback." I mean, it's almost like it could almost be like baseball free agency. You know, all of a sudden there's 15 people that are on the bubble here that really could change the tone. They're not going to change the tone for a team that has three halfbacks, right, or three quarterbacks. But if it's the slot you need, it's just like free agency. And I got to believe the value, I won't say the bidding, but the value for that person could be pretty high at a couple of schools. It has to be. Wouldn't you think?
Oh, sure.
But I'm saying, is this? Well, we talked enough about this, but we'll talk about something else after the break. But to me, it's another whole round here that's going on, and it seems like every year it gets a little bigger. Look what's happening with the girls this year with Notre Dame, and then Connecticut. They had nobody left, and they're grabbing people from everywhere.
Yeah, they've got Irish have two transfers. Yeah, they're both graduate transfers.
And doesn't Connecticut like have two or three as well?
But I don't follow Connecticut recruiting very closely, but yeah, they very well might.
We'll explain this after the break.
They've had them in the past
because the Irish graduated their entire top five, and all of them got drafted.
By the way, they all made their teams too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, they all got drafted, and then the girl was the sixth girl left, right? So weren't they down at one point like five or six people on scholarship?
They probably were. They plus incoming, so they have a few incoming
in Connecticut. same thing. They lost all their people, and they're having trouble recruiting.
Connecticut's always had a lot of people transfer out because they're always bringing in great players, and so, you know, the last one who might not have been the number one player in the class but was on scholarship at Connecticut now all of a sudden sees no playing time. So they've always had people leaving.
Well, they got that horrible conference they're in. Anyway, SP Futures up 18 and a quarter. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Matt Weber on the board with his buddy Jack. Mr. Kevin O'Neill's with us. Let's see, down 50 points yesterday at the low, S&P points. China says we're not doing any more trade talks until the U.S. stops whatever it is they're doing. This morning we're up 19 spook points. Trump predicts fast trade deal with China, but provides no evidence. So the market, again, the market is a ping pong ball between these two places. I don't like it. Everybody knows that. I've said it enough times, so I won't say it again. S&P futures up 19. NASDAQ futures up 43. Actually, it's good trading, though. That part's decent. Dow's up 159. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 114. I'm going to say it was down probably 1.5% yesterday. It was maybe two-thirds back of Fibonacci, two-thirds back. FTSE up 56 points, 0.8%. CAC ran up 51%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei actually down 33, call that flat. Shanghai, in the midst of this whole mess, up 48 cents, so call that flat. Hang Seng up 86, which is 0.3%, which is not a very big move for them. Oil back up 78 cents, 58.69. Oil got hammered yesterday. It was down 250 in the midst of somewhat of a Middle East crisis, but evidently oil does not think so. Brent down is up a buck, but still 68.77. So we were talking oil was priced $63 to start the week, so it's down still 8% on a week. That's a huge move. RBOB gas, 192. That's down 13 cents in 2 weeks. Hopefully I'll find that at the pump. We've got gold down $4 after having a run up yesterday, 1281. Silver down 7 cents, 1454. We need some traffic, weather, sports. Who's ever doing it?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. A couple of issues already on a rainy Friday morning. It looks like the inbound Kennedy Express lanes are blocked just before Diversity Avenue due to a crash. The crews are getting that cleared up quickly here, but that's causing the express lanes to be backed up on the inbound Kennedy. Regular Kennedy is building, but nothing out of the ordinary for a rainy morning. In fact, Friday morning's traffic is usually a bit lighter, so it's not too bad. Outbound looks okay. No issues on the Edens. Traffic building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside expressways are looking good. Off the expressways, looks like we have a crash at Route 53, and that is blocking the left lane just before Devon Avenue on the northbound side of Route 53. So that's caused solid traffic there out in the northwestern suburbs. We also have a crash at 43rd and Ashland on the south side, and it looks like we have a crash at Madison in California on the west side of the city. But it's going to be raining all morning, so give yourself plenty of time because traffic is starting to build up throughout the area and will continue to be slow due to the rainy conditions. We'll be rainy on and off throughout the day with a high of 74. Right now it's rainy and 59 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine today and a high of 88. Right now it's 58 and clear. In sports, the White Sox rallied back for a couple of straight wins down in Houston, splitting that four-game series as they shut out the Astros 4-0. Nick Giolito with a complete game shutout in that one, so a nice win for the Sox.
Who would have thunk after 9 in a row losing to the Astros, they'd win 2.
That's right. Cubs fell behind 7-0 yesterday. I know because I was there. But they rallied back and actually had a chance to come back and tie the game. They had the tying runs on at second and third in the ninth inning. Couldn't get them in, though, and fell to the Phillies 9-7. So the Cubs split four games with the Phils in a battle of first-place teams. Diamondbacks were off last night. They're at the Giants later on tonight. And lastly, NBA basketball. Of course, the Warriors already won the West. The East is a surprise to some as the Raptors won in Milwaukee last night, 105-99, taking a 3-2 lead. They'll head back to Toronto for Game 6, looking to close that out. They, of course, have never been in the NBA Finals. Chief.
So, how many hours were you at the game after beer was cut off yesterday?
Good question. What we did was our seats weren't that great. They were okay down the third baseline under the overhang, but in like the 200 section. So you go up a little bit.
Which used to be called the grandstand. There's a name that's out of the dictionary now.
Yeah, I mean, it's still called the grandstand, I guess. But anyway, we were in the shade, and it was
Upper Reserve or something.
Yeah, we were there and had a few beers. Of course, had a few drinks before the game at an establishment across the street. And the nice thing was that about the eighth inning, we walked out to the Gallagher Way area and stood outside in the sun, watched the game on the big screen, finished the rest of our last drink, and then watched the end of the game out there, and it was great. Stood up. There's big open area, big TV. They got the sound on, and only ticket holders are allowed to go in that area. It was very nice.
Question, do they have the feed from the park, or do you get the feed from the cable company? You have the huge delay?
They must have the feed from the park because there's no delay.
That's one of the big issues.
That would have been weird. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the big issues at the over across the street
in the bars.
Not in the bars and in the rooftops. The rooftops have the huge delay.
Oh yeah, I know. And the bars too. I mean, when you're watching, I remember watching the Cubs Cardinals series in 2015, which the Cubs won that series. We were watching one of the games, my brother and I, on the rooftop across the street, not the rooftops, but at a bar rooftop on Clark, and close enough where you could hear the stadium. And I remember specifically when Baez hit a big home run in that game, the crowd erupted, and we were two pitches behind.
You could have got bonked in the head by the home run ball and not know he hit it.
Right, exactly. So as that happened throughout that game, the Cubs scored a lot of runs that game, and it was an awesome game. The crowd would go nuts, and then everyone in the bar all of a sudden would start cheering, like, oh, I can't wait to see what happens. And then, sure enough, one or two pitches later, it would happen. So it was an interesting way to watch a game.
Some company, some guy, or some lady came up with for those who like listening to the hometown radio, be for the Bears. I mean, I'd much rather listen to Tom Thayer than the schlumps on national TV if I'm listening to the Bears.
I would, too.
They actually came out with this radio that you could dial a delay in the radio. And you could hook it into your stereo or whatever.
Like Slingbox. What it was? That was the name brand one.
It was 8 seconds delay. And right away, this is years ago, I had to run it all the way up to the 7 or 8. And now it's useless because you need a 12. Most of them are like 10 or 11 delay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was a Ute and you got your TV off the antenna. And you turn on...
What was that word?
Did
he say you?
You turn the radio on, they were simultaneous. Well, now they're not. I mean, I'm guessing if the Cubs were on Channel 9 and you picked it up off the air, I'll bet it's equal then.
I bet it is.
Maybe the Cubs just pick it up off the air. Well, you can if it's on the cable. They must get the feed coming out of the park.
Yeah. You know... we talk about cutting the cord a lot, which I did a couple years ago. And one of the unintended consequences, in my opinion, that sucks about cutting the cord is everything you're watching is streamed, and so it's delayed even more so than cable. So when you're watching a live event, like a sporting event, for example, and if you're following along on Twitter, which a lot of people do during a big game, and that kind of sucks because people start tweeting about, a home run or a goal or a big play in the game, a touchdown, whatever, and you're behind, and that sucks. That's one of the negatives about cutting the cord.
I actually think that the high def is better off the air. I watched the Super Bowl.
It is better off
one
the air.
Year when somebody had his gorgeous new TV, and he had he took it right off the air. He had the cable hook up, but he also the guy was an installer, so he had to. He
had the HD antenna.
Well, he had a real antenna, and he had he had an antenna outside, a real antenna. But then he could switch, just get the thing and go from there to the cable. It was a different HD one.
So that's what
HD.
We have, too. So we have except we don't have cable, but we have the, our live stream hookup. But then I have an HD antenna. So I pull my HD on 257.9.32, et cetera. I pull that off the air. So if a game's on regular TV, which a lot of games are, Cub game on WGN or a football game on Fox or Channel 7 or whatever, I'll switch over to that because, one, it's live, and, two, the picture's better.
Picture is better. Yeah, I think it is. I mean, by the time you run through the cables and so forth. Anyway, Kevin, I'm trying to stay away from politics a little bit, but one thing we have talked about, and was talking a lot with Lou yesterday, well, we're talking about the morals not exactly equal. You and I were talking about it on Wednesday. Morals not exactly equaling legality these days, and I think that one of the biggest, this is just lobbing out there, this is one person's opinion, I think one of the biggest issues we have in our country in dealing with, I think the invention of the corporation is one of the most spectacular things that ever happened. It caused a lot of the prosperity that we see. the idea that people can invest in places, separate the money investment from the liability in a lot of ways. Obviously, the money you put in, you're always liable to lose, but they're not going to come get your house like they would have if you're a general partner or something like that. And the idea is that every one of these boards is managed by people who essentially, outside people and people on the boards that essentially control and basically are capable of spanking the CEO when necessary. And I think that, Kevin, that of all the stuff we see in the news about these companies, especially as they get together and you manage and you look at the regulation of big companies versus little companies and those kind of, in my opinion, the biggest thing that has fallen apart in the last 25 years is the supervision of the boards. There's like zero morality there. If you stole $1 billion in your Bank of America or your Wells Fargo and the fine's $200 million, you go, girl. And this thing yesterday, I just frost made it. Who knows if the guy's guilty or not. The feds charged Chicago Bank CEO Stephen Kauk with financial institution bribery and Manafort loans. Evidently, this guy, now, again, there's no detail in this article, millions of dollars in high-risk loans to former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort in exchange for help getting a position within the Trump administration. All right, now, I'm not going to say this guy's a sleazebag, not a sleazebag. He gets his trial. I actually believe that about our country. You get your day in court. He may be innocent. But, Kevin, where the bleep was his board?
How much money did he pay out on that?
Says millions of dollars in high-risk loans. That could be two, but still. I mean, it's somewhere. It sounds to me, by this sentence, and again, you're not writing it, so I can't take it word for word like if you wrote it. I'm guessing that the loan was big enough to where it needed somebody to put a pretty reasonable stamp of approval on it. You know, it's not a car loan.
And there is a loan committee that would absolutely review those kinds of things. And there is which means that if there was quid pro quo, quid pro quo for those loans, that either they had the most oblivious loan committee looking at these things, or they knew it and approved it anyway. So you get that. And
by the way, Kevin used to work for a bank, so he knows
he's from the loans do have to go, whether they go to the board for approval or just reporting doesn't matter. They still go to the board.
So, I mean, it's hard. I mean, I'm not going to accuse everybody in every board, but these become very congenial, and I'm not going to lob something at women or minorities, but the idea that a few women and a few minorities have very multiple board spots. I can practical guarantee you, Mr. Haney, from Green Acres, that nobody's ever voted against a wage increase from any one of these executives. I mean, I think that it's a serious Achilles heel, Kevin, and that the board members are not doing their job. I mean, this Wells Fargo thing. I mean, come on. I mean, how many years has this been going on, one after another? The hits just keep on coming. I don't. I can't imagine. I mean, I was trying to work my way through that when it was happening. I'm talking about the Wells Fargo with people having accounts they didn't know they had. Okay, now, and in my opinion, again, this in a quarter gets you a phone call if you can find a phone booth. I'm saying, Kevin, when we signed up at Harris Bank years and years ago, I'll bet I had a savings account there I never even knew I had. That if I just walked in and they would have said, "Oh, you already got one," I just never used it. But the question comes down is now if you start charging people a minimum, don't you think somebody in that boardroom would say, here's our greatest idea, we're going to charge people a minimum for these non-used accounts? Somebody there, I mean, you're not supposed to run the place if you're a board member. Somebody there had to get a little twitch in their behind and say, wait a minute, these accounts that aren't being used, does everybody know they have them? Or are you just going to lend somebody with a $15 bill on something they never even knew they had? How do you not ask that question, Kevin?
Well,
somebody.
I don't know if you would ask that specific question, just because it would just never occur to me specifically that we may be opening accounts for people who don't know they have them. That anybody in an operation with integrity would do that kind of thing. My bigger issue when it came to something like Wells Fargo is that when they saw the cross sales grow, and believe me, that's a number that they watch, and nobody said, "Hey, this is great performance. What's the magic?"
Yeah.
Somebody explain to me what we're doing that's making this work. And that's where I think that they really failed. It was a common sense oversight thing, and it was people basking in the rewards of the program without asking up the line why.
Well, but I mean, I guess,
and it's incredible to me that nobody would have asked that question.
Well, but you know more about the process, so your question is going to be my more intelligent than mine. Mine are a sledgehammer. Let's see, how many accounts do we have at Wells Fargo? 30 million, sir. How many of those are non-performing and we haven't heard boo for a while? Well, 10 million. 10 million, really? People came in, filled out all the paperwork, and then we never saw them again for like how many years? What? It seems like a lot of work for nothing. Well, not exactly. Whenever somebody shows up and they sign up for a check account, we sign them up for like another one. Okay, and now you're going to turn around.
That's okay, but there's a whole process with dormancy as well on those accounts that they have to follow. And the way it goes is, once it hits whatever the criteria are for dormant accounts at that bank, then the account gets locked out of activity. And there's all kinds of reports and things that show, the percentages of dormant accounts. That's all readily available up the line. And at some point, if it sits there long enough, then you have to turn that money over to the state. It's considered abandoned property. It's not the bank's money.
I'm going to say, Kevin, without mentioning any names, that there was a lady who is now a judge that used to work in the... We used to live in the same apartment I now live in. Okay? Once a year, I get a thing addressed to this judge, who's been a judge for, I'm going to say, 18 years? 17 years? And I get this letter, and I look at it. One time I opened it, I didn't realize it wasn't for me. And it's like $100 for their campaign for judge 18 years ago, and it's still open. And they've never touched it. It's like $100, maybe $80 or something, and it's still there.
That should have been turned over to the state of Illinois a long, long time ago.
Well, but if you have a savings and a checking account and you're very active in your checking account, you're not dormant. So do they take the one account and say that account's dormant? You come in there every week and put a deposit and write checks?
Yeah, because dormant accounts are, especially if it's internal, insider fraud, that's where all the fraud occurs. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm looking for, and I'm never going to get it, being the Catholic from the South Side, is there needs to be, the Yiddish would call him a mensch, and the non-Yiddish would say a Renaissance man. Somebody needs to be the Wilford Brimley and walk into this boardroom and say, "Who let this slide? Whose ass is going to be in my suitcase? And I want the rest of you to resign, and we're getting a new board." We need this to happen someplace, somewhere, Kevin, or we're not. Maybe two or three times and have it publicized to where people realize you're supposed to think there, not just accept your airfare, your shrimp cocktail dinner, and vote for raises. I mean, we need to shake this up. I don't see how that's happening. Otherwise, a lot of the moral governance that goes on in this country is in these boardrooms, and I don't see any. I'm sure there's plenty. There are a lot of really good people there that I don't know. But boy, you see the reluctance to remove people. I don't know, did anybody leave from the Citigroup board or any of those places? All the crap that happened there? I don't think so. I mean,
not that I'm aware of. I don't know of anybody leaving the Wells Fargo board either, other than the CEO.
What's her name left?
And got forced out.
The Secretary of Transportation. What's her name? Alina Cho.
Oh, Elaine Chao?
Yeah, she was there.
Not to be confused with Elena Cho.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. She was on there. And Wendy Graham was on the Enron board. She was the head of the malfeasance committee or whatever they call it. What's the term for that committee where you're you're supposed to be in charge of morals and so
probably,
forth.
Probably the ethics committee or something
yeah,
like that.
She was in charge of the ethics committee or something. Could you have had less ethics anywhere at a board any type? I mean, is
well,
it possible?
I'm not arguing the point. I'd agree with your point on that we have.
Wait a minute, you can't do that on radio.
Done
can't
their
agree
jobs.
Yeah.
And the oversight responsibility is part of it. One nice trend that's happening is that we are seeing fewer people serving on fewer boards.
I think you're right about that.
The idea that you could be on eight boards is kind of fallen by the wayside. That's not happening anymore. And in fact, you know, a lot of corporations just straight have rules that say, you know, if you're on more than two other boards, you can't be on ours. I think three is probably too many.
But well, if you did it right, especially if you're a CEO somewhere else. I mean, you have a full-time job.
Who's the CEO is a full-time job, but you're starting to see people take those kinds of things into consideration, which I think is a positive step.
I would agree. You wonder how this stuff starts to happen. I would never have guessed. By the way, what did Manafort even get loans for? What was he buying? I haven't read the details.
I don't know. Is there anybody slimier in politics than that guy?
You know, Kevin, I honestly believe, since I met one guy just like him on the trading floor years and years ago, because he backed some people that I knew. Kevin, I'm going to say that there's several thousand that fall into this, not exactly a citizen of this place, not exactly as this guy I knew was a citizen of Monaco. Evidently, that's a separate place. It's not France. I don't know much about geography. I think you could be a citizen of Monaco. A lot of people are a citizen of the Isle of Man, which is what, in the Irish Sea? Between Britain and Ireland or something. I mean, there are all these little places. You always get rid of your citizenship at like the U.S. or U.K. or someplace or Germany. So you only, I mean, Manafort's still a citizen here, so he didn't do that, I don't think. But there's all these guys that play this international tax and money game. And there's gotta be massive amounts of money in the system there, Kevin. And these guys, that's what they do. They play one against the other. And Manafort was one of those guys. I mean, if you can become you look at the guy that I think is a dictator and damn near a murderer, the guy who's the head of the Saudi government. Whenever they walk along with their entourage, I'll bet the last three guys in line are American or British or something. These guys get their coaching from people. I'm sure there's all kinds of people who love to be a consultant to the Saudi royal family. I mean, and if you're not, if you're from the U.S. and you've renounced it and you're on Monaco, it probably makes you better. Nobody's chasing you. I mean, I think there's a lot of guys like that. I think he's just one of them. He's probably not even the worst. The guy I met was worse. You know, talking about a sleazebag.
So at best, he's number two.
Yeah, at best. But I mean, it's this stuff's happening. I don't know how you. Well, didn't Rumsfeld have? Who was the guy that we were paying him $100,000 a year or something to be our consultant in Iraq? And when we went in the second time. This guy was going to be helicoptered in and take over for Saddam, and the people damn near lynched him when he got there.
Yeah, I know the name you're trying to.
I mean, they all seem to have like their Rasputins. All these governments. The guy's going to, you know.
You know what? And we see that. We see that in our governments, you know, as well.
Oh, sure.
You know, right in the White House, we've seen that for how many administrations?
Oh, everyone. Everyone's got their guys that somehow. Actually, the Obama administration, it was the girls that got in there that did the nasty stuff. SP Futures only up 15.
Yeah, hey, who's Trump's Rasputin? That's something to consider.
Well, they keep
we
changing.
Off.
I'm going to say Bannon still, probably.
Oh, I don't think so. I think he's on the out.
What about the guy with the stash? Bolton.
I'll think about it. I don't think it's him either.
SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 25. Are you hanging a little bit, or what are you doing?
Well, we need to hang a little bit.
Well, you and Maddie figure it out. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. Maddie Weber is wandering around like an expectant father, for God's sake. He'll be over here in a minute. He'll be on the air today, Mr. Weber. S&P Futures is now up 13 and a quarter. We were up 18 when we came in, so we're leaking a little bit. NASDAQ Futures only up 23 now. 21.75. We got Foot Locker came out with earnings and stocks down $4, trading 48.60. So boy, every one of these retail stocks has moved, I'm going to say damn near 10% in earnings, and yet some are up, some are down. Kevin, I have a question for you. It is interesting. You know, once in a while, I'll say something like, to make a long story short, then I'll say, too late.
Too late.
Yeah. Dow set to rebound more than 100 points after Trump predicts a quick resolution to trade war. Too late? For a quick resolution?
Way too late.
Way too late. God.
Well, you know, this is, it's actually, it's interesting. Step aside and forget other real, like, real implications, and just look at this from the amusement value. the number of times that this swings back and forth, and you would think, and maybe it has. I mean, the market bounces up and down, but there have been many times when you or other guests have said, I don't understand the reaction. It's not, you know, the bad news, we didn't swing as badly as I thought we would, or the good news, I didn't think we went up, and maybe the market's baked it in. Maybe the market is starting to discount, you know, the daily pronouncement.
That's kind of been my theme all week, Kevin, is that there's almost like two levels of the market now. One is the VIX, which is a 16 right now after yesterday's big move, which is pretty high, but it's certainly not crisis high. It's not 20, 25, 30. So it's almost like the market is acting in terms of liquidity, in terms of big moves any second, which seemed to be like $20. Well, yesterday was more. Yesterday we're 50 for a while. It seems to be in a perpetual state of 10 minutes before the Fed announcement, where we're just, or before an earnings announcement, when they used to be doing during the day. You know, we're right before the earnings announcement, we're, wait a minute, every order that comes in, you think the person who's got the order already has the news, so you dodge them, you know, type of thing. So the entire market is waiting for this 20-point move utterance on somebody's part. But yeah, in the other time, we're actually sort of range-bound. You know, we held the, David talked yesterday about holding the 27.95 number, and we're bouncing back today. We're 28.31. So you could say we're violently within this 2800 to 2950 range. As crazy as it seems, there's like two levels. On one level, we're fairly steady. On another level, we're not so steady on an instant liquidity. But then you look at individual stocks that have absolutely been trounced that are normally bellwethers. And the thing that I try and express it, but it's sort of different because it's somewhat complicated and it's something that I've been studying my whole life. So I sort of get it, but these are very tough issues to get. We're starting to compound ourselves a little bit here, Kevin. For 9 years, we were, no matter what the world was, no matter how many people were unemployed, no matter what things were, as long as the Fed poured more money in the system and pumped the asset base up, meaning stocks and houses and buildings, that the people who control the country are fine with that. They don't really care necessarily whether Mickey DeMulp gets, he goes from 50,000 to 65,000, so he can actually save $5 a week. I mean, nobody really, I won't say they don't care, but they don't care enough to do anything about that. I'm sure you'd rather have it up. Why not? I mean, most people like people enough to where you hope they're doing better. But but now we're seeing this thing where the solution, and all you heard about yesterday was how the market's going down. When's the Fed going to act? Well, one of the things that's going to happen if this tariff stuff stay out there, even our bleeps, they're trying their best not to show any inflation. Somewhere, someplace, this tariff inflation is popping through. Prices are going up all over the place, from car windows down to you name what it is. So the last thing the Fed needs, with everybody beating on them to drop from, you know, 2.75 back down to 1.5 or something, is for us to get like a two number on the inflation 1 month or something. Like a 0.5 or something, where somebody goes, holy bleep. Even the way these guys are counting it, that's 6% a year. You guys can't lower the interest rates and put more money in the system. Well, you might as well throw gasoline on a huge fire. So, I mean, we're reaching a point now where all this stuff is starting to come together. And, which doesn't mean you should sell or buy or anything today. I mean, everybody knows you can never take these kinds of You can't take these kinds of predictions. But I'm telling you, Kevin, this stuff is starting to pile up. And I don't know where it's all heading, but you start getting the Fed, you know, pouring money into the system to save the stock market at the same time you've got an inflation thing. What's the difference between a bunch of tariffs starting inflation and in 1972 when they cut off the oil? It's the same thing, right? It's an artificially induced, but then it starts to percolate through the system and it's there. I think we have to be careful when we're doing this, and I don't see us being all that careful. I mean, but I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, neither do you. I mean, this may turn out to be a brilliant gambit, but I really believe, I was talking to my nephew yesterday, actually for a while, and he was a good kid. He's 30-something. And I honestly think we're totally ass backwards on these negotiations, Kevin. I mean, I really do. I mean, I think if you don't want the influence over here, you've got to tell your high-end buddies, guess what? This is the way the Chinese operate, okay? We're not going to tell our people that you can't sell your company to the Chinese somehow. We're not doing that. I don't know why that is, because even in this world, you can't sell your trucking company to the Chinese because they pay more than somebody here, and then have a rule the next day to say they can't unscrew the engine to see what the engine's made of. I mean, they just bought it.
Yeah, if you own it, you own it.
Yeah, right? you own it. And so, I mean, why don't we just take this totally the other way and say, guess what? You guys can't buy anything over here just like we can't buy anything over there. Well, and here's a list of 200 things that you cannot give a drawing to these guys or you're going to jail. I mean, I don't think in World War, in 1940, that we are, certainly not in 1942, that we gave somebody the okay to sell the plans of the P-51 Mustang to Adolf Hitler. And yet we're letting people do it, and then we're pissed off at the other side's asking for it. To me, that I don't even get the logic. I mean, they're obviously not a 50s mother, because a 50s mother would say, wait a minute, if I don't want you doing something, I'm going to tell you not to do it. I'm not going to tell your buddy not to ask you to do it. Right?
Yeah, so where's the impetus for this coming from? I mean, step back a little bit and say, do we have businesses saying, I want to sell them. I want to sell them my business, but I don't want to give up the trade secrets. And they're asking government to help. Do we have government just sort of arbitrarily saying this? Let's take it back to the source.
Well, if you listen to Carl, his big example is the Fellows shredder, where Fellows went over there and started manufacturing the stuff in China. But of course, they still own 51% of the company, the Chinese, right? So what they did is they essentially took it apart, mimicked the damn thing, and came back here and basically were selling, as a competitor, Fellows machines here. Okay? But now this is like the trading floor in Milton Friedman's term, and if everybody saw everybody trading with everybody, you probably don't need any rules against, insider trading, because you'll know the same person who does it every month, and nobody will trade with them. So okay, so the next place went over, and I suppose you and I, it's Kevin and Chiefs and Maddie's, super shredder. Now we go over there, and maybe we're both 70 years old, and we sit there and go, these guys are gonna take half my company, they're gonna make sure I never have a labor problem. God knows they never have a labor problem over there. Does people think that just happens, and that somebody keeps their thumb on these people? I got to pay them this, but this is what I get in return. They make sure the factory is built properly. They make sure. And oh, by the way, we got a billion customers over here. I think in the next 5 years, Kevin, we're going to make so damn much money. I don't give a rat's behind if 10 years from now they show up with a Chief and Kevin Super Shredder. You and I are going to be fat and happy. And we're going to be living in Monaco, going out with Grace Kelly's granddaughters. I mean, it's either our decision to make, okay. Or it's not.
And under what circumstances should it not be our decision?
When the shredder is something is here that we need for military, for something, or if it's any kind of security, or whatever.
I think I'm just going back to your original point. Then why don't we designate what those products or industries or product lines are?
That's been my line for 6 months.
Then we'll protect those, and then everything else is free game. You're on your own. Don't be stupid. If you want to protect your patents, don't sell your company.
Yeah, I've been preaching it for 6 months.
It seems pretty easy, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's what I've been preaching for 6 months. The idea is some kind of an agreement. You're going to get these guys to admit they've been doing something nefariously all along when it's been a free, to me, it's been a free contract, whatever they've done it with. To get them to admit that to be nefarious, I don't think that's going to happen. And for them to promise going forward that they're not going to ask Boeing for the tail plans when Boeing is dying to sell, they're going to sell more planes to the Chinese in the next 20 years than they are here. So you think Boeing is
going to... Because what we're really saying here, Tom, is I want to do business with dishonest people knowingly and be protected from it.
Yeah, essentially. Somehow.
And I go back to, I don't even know if the man's still alive, but a fellow named Bob Foy, who was the executive vice president for the Aon Corporation for when I worked there. And I remember him saying, I don't even remember who the company was or what the situation was, but I remember him saying, we don't do business with people like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how hard is this? You know, it's not always a profitability play.
Well, okay, but now... Put yourself when the stakes get higher, and we've somehow let two airplane manufacturers left in the world. I guess you could make some dumb case about Bombardier's in there and the Brazil guys are in there. By and large, there's two airline companies. Now, we have, I'm going to say that what percentage of the growth is in Asia? I mean, it's got to be, like I said, I honestly believe that if you take the couple countries around China, they're a bigger customer to Boeing than we are. So, I mean, now what is the Boeing board going to say? We don't like these guys, but we're not going to do business with them. I mean, you and I might actually say that. I don't think we last on the board very long because everybody's chasing this almighty dollar. I mean, people throw a baby off a bridge for a buck right now, Kevin. There's no honor here, is there?
Well, then. You know, don't ask me to bail you out.
Well, that's right.
And
that's right.
They are asking you and me to bail them out. Ultimately, when it's government's job to bail them out, that means it's your job and my job.
Yeah, tell the Chinese what they can and can't put in a contract between me and the Chinese. Duh. You know, the other stuff, the fact that they sell stuff here and unbeknownst to people, there's a chip in there that, you know, lets the guy over there in the pilot board listen to our radio show or something, you know, that I get. I mean, there probably are some legitimate security concerns. Now, whether they're worse or better than we are at that, I'm going to say they're more nefarious than we are. I'm enough of an American to say they're more nefarious than we are. Are we totally, I mean, are we so far removed from that we would never think of such a thing? Yeah, I don't know about that. We're the ones that have satellites taking pictures of everybody's behind in their backyard. And we don't seem to care if we take pictures from up in the air and people. I mean, what are these privacy? What are the international privacy concerns? Is it okay to fly over somebody else's country and take pictures? I don't know. I'm not so sure I want somebody with a drone flying over my backyard taking pictures, even though I don't have a backyard. I mean, you know,
we were doing that back in the U2 days.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know that there's a morality here anywhere with these people, including us. Do you?
Probably not.
So I mean, you know, I understand that the Chinese,
or there's a weird one. Again, you get back to, okay, what's the honor among the thieves?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that the Chinese do business is unconscionable. Okay, so I would prefer to not do business with them. Now, if all of a sudden somebody were to call me tomorrow and say, "Hey, I hear you got this great brokerage firm. I got 100 clients over in China. All of a sudden, they want to do business in the U.S. I've actually looked into this. We could put through our Interactive Brokers affiliation, we could be PTI Hong Kong in a week. And over there, there's a law that says you got to, even though everything's an online account, you got to bring the account in person. It's got to be in paper. IB will say, we'll just use our office. All of a sudden, walk in. Do you represent people from PTI? Yes, we do. It's our portal. It's our spot using their system. It's their security, and they're terrific at it. I mean, we could do that tomorrow. Now, would I turn that down, or would I just make sure that the people that I dealt with, that I looked at their stuff, that they didn't do any nefarious things to the market, I watched them like a hawk? I'd probably watch them like a hawk instead of saying no. But I get to do that, you know, at PTI. I get to watch my customers like a hawk if I want to, if they deserve it. Most of them don't. Matter of fact, none of them do. But now,
but you're not asking for someone else to watch them like a hawk or to otherwise deal with them.
No, but would I would look for people that had, you know, expertise, that had money, that had a big deposit, and let them trade stuff in the normal way. Why should I say no to them? Why wouldn't I?
And Tom, that's always the issue when you do business overseas, or frankly, when you do business out of your region, depending on the size of your business, is do you have the ability to monitor what's going on? Because if you know, that's always a factor. So, you know, can you get in there? Can you really know what's happening? And that's, you know, if you're not willing to do that, then you're not willing to do the deal. And it would be the same thing if you set up PTI Hong Kong. If you aren't willing to keep tabs on what goes on in Phoenix, because that John Neal guy who's John calling in a little while.
Yep.
Yeah, that John Neal guy, you better grill him when he's on the air here and make sure you know what's going on. But, you know, you are tapped into what's going on in your Phoenix
when we
office.
When we first started online trading, we had a kid who was a great softball player. He ended up...
Well, that's the important way to hire someone. Well, I know that myself.
But when we first did online stuff, we worked with IB. IB has a terrific monitor system for everything. I mean, so you really... You know, you really don't have to watch it that much, because they have the account manager, and there's no way on earth that Kevin O'Neill wants to buy 1,000 shares of IBM and he has only money for 500. Things are going to pop right back at you and say, hey, buddy, what do you, your finger hit the wrong me. You know, I mean, not that you don't have to monitor it, you do, but it's not like when we first started out, where every single...
Well, that's what I was about to say is, you know, how you monitor when you first roll something out versus how you monitor it on an ongoing basis are different issues.
Well, when we first started...
There is less burden. You're just looking for things that get a little out of whack and that raise flags to see if you have to go back in and get close to it again.
When we first started, it was a riot because something had come across the automatic system where somebody would put the order in themselves. You know, we would have the big Matt had the thing set for a submarine diving. he'd run his chair over to the machine, he'd check, and he'd immediately get the person's account up, and he was really good at it. So it took maybe 15 seconds to see if A, it was appropriate, B, if he had the money, then he hit a button and let it go through. But nothing went through without us looking at it. I mean, it just wasn't going to happen. You know, and now as the technology's got better, a place like IB, their technology is so good where they don't even look at it. We don't trust it enough that much. We look at it, you know, at least on a, you know, daily or hourly basis. But the chances of you selling 1,000 options when you got, you know, 25 grand in your account, that can't happen. But in the old days, that order could come through, and we had somebody whose job with a backup that, you know, whoa, whoa, whoa. What's he trying to do? How much money has he got? Phone comes up. Hey, Joe, you just said you wanted to sell, you know, 1,000. Don't you mean like one? Oh, yeah, I meant one. You know, I'm saying is there's monitoring and there's stuff. I mean, you're either going to let your people have this free range in China. I mean, for a while we hated the Japanese, but when they came and bought, not hated, but I mean, when they bought Pebble Beach for four times more than anybody else wanted, or they had probably 5 to 10 buildings in Chicago, Kevin, that they paid probably three times the going rate for because they were equating real estate the rest of the world when it was in Tokyo in the '80s when the stock market was 35,000 over there, and nobody said no. Can you imagine if one of those guys came over here, the Chinese came over with the big fight Trump's having with these guys, if one of his buddies, Bolton, owned a building somewhere, and he got some huge bid for the Chinese, and then Trump told him no, Donald, the bid for this place is $1 billion. These idiots are offering three. What are you telling me no for? What's the matter with you? I mean, right?
Yeah, again, it goes back to, is it an industry or a business that needs to be protected for national interest reasons?
And
if no, then why would anybody say no?
But then the other idea, you let them buy the building, but you don't give them the keys. Well, I don't know if you can do that.
Hey, that's a good deal if you can get it.
Yeah, it's a great deal if you can get it. Hey, what early on this year, I was looking at the recruiting. Did every 4- and 5-star guy go to Alabama and Clemson or what? In football, changing.
Oh, actually, Notre Dame just signed a big-time running back yesterday, so not everyone.
Really?
They didn't sign them. They got a commitment from them.
I'd like to see us get some 4- and 5-star linemen.
Well, the Irish have done very well, on, especially with offensive linemen, and they've done better with defensive linemen over the last several years than they ever did historically.
Right, I'm going to ask you the million-dollar question on that. Is the offensive line recruitment and play going downhill since the incredible coach we had went to the Bears? Because the Bears' offensive line plays, of course, they weren't injured as much, is going straight
well, it's,
up.
It's hard to say about the line play because they have, you know, like Bars getting injured last year, really hurt a lot. So it's hard to make a call about that. But yeah, Harry Hiestand was a pretty good coach, and he's been a pretty good coach for the Bears. The Bears' offensive line has developed nicely.
Yeah.
Since he got there, has recruiting fallen off? I don't think so. Let's see. But time will tell. My problem with Notre Dame's offensive line is we run an offense that doesn't utilize the offensive line. If I were a strategist, looking at Notre Dame and saying I can't recruit everybody, but one thing I always have, I've never had a problem recruiting is offensive linemen. I would build what I do around the offensive line, and that would be, I would have a pro style, the old style pro, and now pro is turning into a 7-on-7 league as well. But I would have that power running game built around there, similar to what Stanford does, and only I think Notre Dame has access to more talent, so they could do what Stanford does, only do it better. And that, they seem to be able to get quarterbacks who will do well in a system like that. They seem to be able to get offensive linemen in quantity. And I think that's in part because, you get offensive linemen from the good schools. When you get the suburban Chicago schools or suburban anywhere schools, you get your big guys are good offensive linemen, and they're, so they have access. So that, I would build my program around that, but Brian Kelly wants to be a spread coach, and I don't think that utilizes the one position that Notre Dame can always get.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's even like you look at the schools in the Midwest. I mean, you're always going to find like a number one draft pick on a line coming out of Iowa or Purdue. They've had that history of. By the way, Tommy Thayer from Notre Dame and from Julia Catholic is named one of the top 100 Bears of all time. Well, can you name from top to bottom, from 1 through 10? The top 10.
In order?
Yes.
Well, not in order. I would tell you that Walter Payton would be near the top.
Number one.
That Gale Sayers should be.
Number five.
I was going to say the only thing getting Sayers' way would be longevity. Let me see. George Connor in there somewhere?
He would be... somewhere. He's in the top 25. We find him.
Okay, so not in the top 10, though.
22.
Let's see. I don't know. Dick Butkus.
Number
certainly.
Two.
Bill George.
Number seven.
Let me try and get one more, and then you can just read them off. Let me see. Who would I pick for that's got to be in there?
I would have. I'm
blanking on names.
I actually pretty much agree with the top 10.
Who was the quarterback back when they were the monsters?
Luckman. Sid Luckman. Sid Luckman would be number four. Sid Luckman would be number four.
Sid Luckman. That's who I'm thinking of, yeah. Okay, read them off. Let's hear them.
From one down, Walter Payton, Dick Butkus, Bronco Nagurski, you forgot. Sid Luckman, okay, yep. Gale Sayers, Duck Coach, Bill George, then a guy before our time, Bulldog Turner, Doug Atkins, who was that good, Danny Fortman, I don't remember him at all, I don't know who the hell that is, Dan Hampton, Richard Dent, Jimbo Covert, who was probably the best offensive lineman ever played, it's not in the Hall of Fame, Brian Urlacher, Mike Singletary, Bill Hewitt, was he a center? Stan Jones, remember him, he came from another team. Stan Jones was the first guy who was into weightlifting. Jay Hilgenberg, Steve McMichael, Devin Hester, Joe Steidahar, he was a two-way guy, George Connor, George McAfee, Joe Fortunato, Ed Sprinkle. remember most of these guys. Matter of fact, I knew George pretty well because he used to come to the Notre Dame then. Real nice guy. Real nice guy. But those guys, that's a pretty good list. A lot of Hall of Famers. I mean, they're all Hall of Famers, aren't they?
That's a fantastic list, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we got three linebackers in the Hall of Fame, one right after another. Actually, make that four. We got Bill George, we got Butkus, we got Singletary, and we got Urlacher. But what team has had four people that good sequentially at that position? Might have been a year or so.
Yeah, all middle linebackers, too.
Yeah, pretty amazing. And of the top, and the guys above that were, you know, they're pretty darn good too. But, you know, obviously the Gales there, but Walter Payton was special from the amount of years he played. What, he missed one game in 14 years, 13 years or something?
Something like that. And just as a halfback, great. As a football player, when you started saying everything else that he could do, and yeah, you know, his ability to throw passes was better than the average halfback. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about him as a blocker, as a receiver, as, you know, all of those things that were routinely part of his
punter,
duties. He was, you know, a better receiver than just about any halfback you'd ever see. He was a better blocker than just about any halfback you would ever see. And, you know, his runner, the only thing he didn't have as a runner was the kind of breakaway speed that a Dorsett or somebody like that had. But, man, his burst for the first 10 yards was incredible.
Well, Dr. J, who was in the one training camp with the Bears, and when Peyton was there, and he said he wasn't the fastest guy and he wasn't the strongest guy, but he was just fast enough that if you lunged for him, he would get around you. And he was just strong enough that if you waited back because you didn't want to make a move for him, he'd knock you over. He said he was just the perfect in the middle to where he could do either one. He wasn't Gale Sayers, in which case, you know, he'd leave you grasping air. But by the same token, he was probably a little stronger to where if you let him hit you, he'd make you look bad. He was just kind of perfectly in the middle. Which is sort of interesting.
The only guy I knew who could finish a run like he was Jim Brown.
Yeah, and then he'd be the first guy up. He'd pull the other guy up, slap him on the behind, head to the dark, huddling. He never got tired. But his training was run up and down that hill in the sand, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And nobody would work out with the guy. I mean, when he
every time he took someone out, he'd get him out once, never twice.
Yeah, and even when he went to when he run, what he used to run what 15 or 20 100-yard sprints. You know, okay, that's good. You guys are like after the third or fourth. What are you running the whole way? Well, yeah, it's like, you know. But the Tony Dorsett had that miraculous. I mean, I don't know if you had to pick a guy for one game, Kevin. Who would you pick?
If you had Walter Payton. If I had to pick a guy for one play, I'd pick Gale Sayers.
I was going to say OJ ranks in there somewhere.
Yep. OJ was pretty good.
Yeah,
man, he was a killer halfback.
Okay, Kevin, thank you very much, buddy.
SP on that Futures, note, huh?
Yeah. SP Futures down 13.50. Yeah, killer halfback. SP Futures up 13.50. And SP Futures up 27. We're getting back a chunk of yesterday, probably a third of it almost exactly. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so.
I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. SP Futures up 12.50, NASDAQ Futures up 26.25. We're trying to bounce back from yesterday's pretty much disaster. We're down 50 spook points for a while. It's a big move. It's way above even what we've been doing somewhat on a daily basis. This morning we've got Foot Locker came out with earnings. The stock's down $5. I got a position I put in there. I'd like to see that come back a little bit. I didn't expect it to go down that much. But all these retail stocks are moving one way or the other. I mean, Target's up like 10%. These guys are down 8%. It's sort of crazy. They're all moving, but the question is, and you know, when you try and do the spreads, it's like within 4 points of the strike where the stock is traded the day before earnings, all the spreads are the same price. So it's like the whole world has figured out that they're going to make this move, and anywhere in there is sort of the right spot. Anyway, if anybody has been asleep all morning, Theresa May has resigned as UK Prime Minister. Did not get this Brexit deal done. I don't know. I think they're going to end up with a cold Brexit, to be honest with you. I don't, unless they get somebody in there who wants to re-vote it, which I don't see that happen. The Brits are not.
She tried, what, three times to make something happen?
And more like five.
Yeah, and couldn't get anything done?
Well, she kept coming back with a plan that said you couldn't vote your way out of the new plan after the guys had just voted their way out of the old plan. So I don't know how anybody was going to, you know, pony up for that. Anyway, over in Europe, we've got the, as soon as my machine starts to move here.
Very similar to Rom. Gets in the job, yeah. Faces some adversity, and realizes this sucks, and resigns.
I don't think she wanted out in the first place. No. And that's a problem. And the people in Europe, we're going to make them pay this huge price. And why they decided to do that, I think they're going to end up just saying, we're just leaving and we'll see what happens. I mean, it's a tough deal.
Yeah.
DAX up 99.8%, which is up, it was up more earlier. FTSE up 59.8%, kick around up 46. Again, 0.8%. So uniform across the board over there. Nikkei down 33 points, call that flat. Shanghai up 48 cents, call that flat. Hang Seng up 86.3, so very little going on over there. Even though Trump says we're gonna close this deal shortly. So oil up 68 cents. But still, horrible week for oil. It was down like 230 yesterday. It was still under $59. 58.59. It was down like 250 yesterday. Brent up 84 cents, 68.60. Natural gas, 257, going nowhere. RBOB down to 191. So, we should have some. That's a drop of 14 cents really in a couple of weeks.
So we should see that at the pump a little bit. We've got gold given back only $3 now. 1282 was up a bunch yesterday. Silver down 6 cents, 1454. Gold still above 1280. Maybe we got forest traffic, weather, sports.
40 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. It's been a nightmare this morning for a Friday. Usually Friday's pretty light, but with the rain in the area, it's caused all kinds of issues. And even though the rain's tapering off, the issues remain. We have a crash on the Dan Ryan outbound right before 95th Street. That's causing some delays, but the inbound Ryan has been moving slow all morning. Traffic building heavily on the Stevenson, Bishop Ford, and I-57 as well. Same for the Eisenhower. But the Kennedy is the worst part. We have multiple crashes on both sides of the Kennedy. We have a stall on the outbound side right now at Damon. That's blocking the left lane, so that's causing issues if you're heading out toward O'Hare. On the inbound side, we have issues on the express lanes and on the local lanes. Just before Diversey on the express lanes, there was an earlier crash. Crews are still working to get that cleared up. And there's also a crash on the inbound side blocking the left lane at Addison. Multiple issues on the Kennedy. It's basically a parking lot in both directions. You'll want to avoid that if at all possible. Out in the western suburbs on the tri-state, we have a crash blocking the two right lanes northbound just before I-88, the Reagan there. So all kinds of issues out west, too. And then on the Reagan itself, there's a crash blocking the left lane eastbound just before Myers Road. So stop-and-go traffic all over the area, but the rain is tapering off and will remain cloudy for the rest of the day. Could have some more showers later on, thunderstorms as well. We'll reach a high of 74. Right now, it's overcast and 60 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 88 today. Right now, it's clear and 59. In sports, Lucas Giolito pitched a shutout as the White Sox beat the Astros 4-0, splitting that four-game set down in Houston. Cubs fell behind by 7, rallied back to make it interesting, but lost to the Phillies 9-7 at Wrigley. They split their four-game set as well. The Diamondbacks were off yesterday. They're at the San Francisco Giants later on tonight. Your report was so long, Chief. My music ran out. Toronto beat Milwaukee 105-99 in the Eastern Conference Finals. Raptors lead the series 3-2. The winner will take on Golden State.
Manny, who the hell are Hibbett Sports?
I've never heard of Hibbett Sports.
Whatever it is, they're up. His Foot Locker's down 10%. They're up 15%. So I'm saying his retail stuff is somewhat. Well, hey, well, I have you on the mic. I have a question for you. Some guy comes out today. Some guy. I got a guy. Amazon shares will reach 3,000 in 2 years without the company really trying, Piper Jaffray says. Now, my question to you is, it looks like real growth. Let's say there's some real growth. Not a whole hell of a lot, but some. And yet we've seen Walmart, Target, and a lot of other places, their online stuff is starting to do a lot better. They poured a lot of money into it, and it looks like their market share is increasing. If that's happening, how do they say there's let's say a bigger percentage is going from, I'm not so sure this is true over a long period of time, but a bigger percentage is going online than person to person, bricks and mortar, correct? That's one graph.
That would make sense.
Okay,
yeah.
So even if we might reach a limit where people like to go shopping and whatever. So, but let's say it's growing. And now you've got Target, Walmart clearly, started out in the back pew, but are no longer in the back pew. I mean, they're doing some pretty good on this stuff. Pep Boys, a lot of other places that I go online are pretty darn good at it too. I bought all the screws and connection plates and everything for a huge deck project all online. There's places that have really terrific online stuff. You get pretty decent prices, and they ship the next day. I mean, it's unbelievable. Why do we think that Amazon is going to continue to maintain this lead when these other guys look to me like they're doing pretty darn good? And I won't say they're catching up, but I don't think they're ever going to be a shrinking violet again either. I mean, are we talking about the whole online stuff growing such a fast pace that all that stuff can happen, that they all can grow that fast? Or are we saying Amazon is going to continue to out-innovate Walmart and Target? Because I don't know if that's happening.
I agree with you. I believe Amazon got a huge head start for various reasons that we've talked about on the show a lot, mostly tax related. But I think everyone else is catching up to some degree, and someone else, probably not Walmart or Target, but someone we're not even thinking about, will out-innovate Amazon too. And 5-10 years from now, there might be a new Amazon. I mean, I refuse to believe, just from what I've seen in the last 10, 15, 20 years, that what's big today is guaranteed to be big in 10 years. It just doesn't work that way anymore. I mean, things change.
You don't sound the same as when I met you 10 years ago.
Well, being on this show will change a person.
Okay. Hope for the better.
Hopefully for the better. But no, I think you're right. I don't know necessarily that it's going to be Walmart and Target catching up, but it could be. Or it could be somebody we're not even thinking about, or that doesn't exist yet. But to think Amazon's going to be like this, you know, huge leader for the next 20 years, it's possible, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, I'm not a Mr. Online purchaser, Joe. I'm not much of a purchaser anyway, but
Let's just say my fiance does enough for the both of us.
Yes, well, but the last, I know Audrey's in love with the, you know, same-day delivery and stuff. I just went to my new Sam's membership was $10 more than last year. Instead of the business, which was the best, now I got something plus. There's free delivery there. So if I want to go over to Sam's Club and say, send us to the office.
What do you pay for Sam's Club a year?
Well, I got four people involved, so it's like $80 or something.
That's still cheaper than Amazon Prime for one person.
Well, I don't get the TV
stuff.
But
you don't get the TV stuff. So Amazon Prime, you get the free shipping, and you get the TV stuff. And I think it's either $90 or $100 a year. And Jill has it. You also get some perks with some discounts and some special offers and stuff like that. But it sounds like that Sam's and those other places are going to a similar model where they're just going to do a...
Yeah.
And that's great. I mean, if you get enough stuff from there, the free delivery pays for itself, you would think.
But we have... I mean, I guess what I'm saying is to assume that these other people... I mean, I said to my brother Dan, you know, I was the president of PTI, I go, you know, our Sam's Club now has free delivery. And he goes... Well, we use Quill. They're four blocks away. They deliver it, and they're the same price. So it's not like these other guys have been asleep. You know, because I'll check Sam's prices, but last time I checked, Quill was just as cheap on Office Paper, and they deliver it.
There you go. Well, so, you can't. I mean, you can't be cheap. I mean, you have to evolve, otherwise you're dead. I mean,
yeah.
Look at. I remember in 2005. If you probably remember this, Staples did a huge. Invasion into Chicago, basically.
Yep.
Big box Staples. And they built something like 8 or 10 stores all throughout the city. I think there's like 2 left.
Yep.
I mean, talk about bad timing. They came in and invested all this money and built these huge Staples stores, big, beautiful, you know, office supply stores all over the city. And they just got wiped out because all these other players came in and were doing free delivery and all kinds of stuff. And people stopped caring about, you know, a lot of people don't even buy paper anymore or very little of it.
Yep.
And they got smoked. I mean,
well, there was one on 95th Street, and I would go in there a couple of times. This is when my mom was still alive, and I'm saying, man, that was the only person in the place, and the inventory in there was huge.
Inventory's huge. They'd always have back then. They would have 10 people working, 8 people working, and those stores are a ghost town. And then Office Depot and Office Max merged a few years ago, and I went into an Office Max recently, and now they got like 2 people working. And,
yeah. Yet,
and the place is still huge and still empty and still has a ton of inventory. But they've really cut their sales force down.
Yeah, you wonder where this is all kind of going to land. But I do think people still like to go to the store. I mean, when I go to the store, I don't even know what I want until I walk in there. And I see something on sale, something new, I'll try it. I mean, obviously, if you know exactly what you want, you might as well do it online.
You go to a store without knowing what you want?
Sure.
I mean, a grocery store, I could see that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a grocery store.
But you don't go to, like, an Office Max without knowing, without a reason.
No, that's for business. You know, just what you want.
Right. I agree with you, actually, which probably is weird to say for a 35-year-old.
Yeah.
But I prefer to shop in a store over online, too. Only because so many times I've bought something online, and I don't get what I think I'm getting. And I guess that's my fault. But whether it's clothing or... something, you know, you order something, it looks great online, and you get it, and you're like, this isn't what I want, like, this is low quality, whatever, but if I'm in a store, obviously, you touch it, you see it, if it's clothing, you can try it on, and you know what you're getting, and now everyone has, like, free returns and things like that, so I guess that doesn't matter
but
as much.
I can't go to, well, this is going to sound, this is politically incorrect, so dump me if you have to, I can't go to female model, where I see shoes I like and order 3 different sizes and send the other 2 back.
I know. I can't either.
I can't do that.
I know. But they make it easy for them to do that.
Yes.
Because they say, don't worry, it's free shipping to return it. It's free. There's no restocking fee or anything like that. Go ahead and do it. And they do it. I mean,
I think that Amazon
and
Prime.
And it's basically next day anyway, so, yeah. You know, it's no big deal.
I think Amazon Prime stopped that. There's some limit to that. I think.
You might be right. I don't
something
know.
Something
happened. I know for a fact, though, with clothing, just because Jill does it when she goes on these sprees, and she'll order six dresses, and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of dresses. And she's like, oh, I'm only going to keep like three of them. I just want to try them on and see what I like.
Well, if you're
like.
Enough of a customer, you just leave the package out for the next day delivery, and the guy takes it.
That's crazy.
If you're living in the, I don't know if they do that where we are, but in the burbs, you do that. You just leave the thing out there, and the UPS guy comes with the next day's delivery, and he takes the old one back. You have to go to this, you have to drop it off.
That's not a bad deal.
It's not a bad deal. Well, who was girl Maddie, the temp we had for a while from Loyola? Yep. Her roommate would routinely order three different sizes of shoes sent to back. I could never do that.
I couldn't either, but it makes sense.
Well, yeah, I guess. But, no, I mean, I would love, I love looking at stuff. I mean, you could put me in one of those, Farm and Fleet stuff. I'd walk around that place for 2 hours. I mean, it's, plus they have every, you know, stuff you would never think of buying. I'd be buying, you know, nuts for the office or red licorice, something you're not going to get online. I mean, I'm a sucker for, if I see something and I...
You're a sucker for when you're waiting in line at the register to buy the candy or the peanuts.
I'm exactly the person they got on...
the beef jerky.
They got on the TV that has no desire to go in there and buy a candy bar. Then I see two for one and I throw the two in the bucket. I mean, it just... Hey, shift gears a little bit on you. What? I saw something this morning. Without getting too political here, is our guy going to push the envelope on every single thing to where we're not going to recognize this country when he's out, if he leaves? But now the latest is they want to review the constitutional right to give people pardons after he pardoned this Conrad Black when the guy wrote a book about what a great president he is. The guy went to jail. He was with the Sun Times, right? He was with, what was the name of, Google up Conrad Black. He was part of the Sun Times empire that fell, and he's the Canadian guy. Actually, he's Sir Conrad Black. I think he got knighted for doing something, but then he stole all the money from the company, and I think, I shouldn't say this. I'm not sure. I think Jim Thompson was on that board. Was that Hollinger? Was the name of the place?
You're talking about stuff that I have no idea about.
Just Google Conrad Black.
He's in the headlines all over the place for the pardon stuff.
Yeah, well, he went to jail, and he embezzled money from the corporation. I mean, I don't think it was even a hard trial. And then he writes his book about saying what a spectacular guy Trump is and how he's the best president we've ever had. And all of a sudden, the guy gets pardoned. I mean, it's as bad as Clinton pardoning the guy, who was that thief? The guy that he pardoned and gave his wife all the money. Remember the guy from Switzerland? What the hell is his name? So one of our guys will tweet that in. But, what are we doing with it? I mean, can't we? I mean, every president pardons some people, and there's always a question about one or two. But you'll see the huge list of people that request a pardon. And most presidents only pardon, I'm going to say, 5-10% of all the people. And there's usually a big process for doing all this stuff. And maybe some of them will commute the sentence to somebody.
So Conrad Black, just reading his bio on Wikipedia, Canadian-born British former newspaper publisher and author. In 2007, he was convicted of 4 counts of fraud in U.S. District Court in Chicago. While 2 of the criminal fraud charges were dropped on appeal, a conviction for felony fraud and obstruction of justice were upheld in 2010, and he was resentenced to 42 months in prison and a fine of $125,000. In 2018, he wrote a glowing book about President Trump, and then on May 15, 2019, he was granted a full pardon by Trump.
Yeah, full pardon, like he never did anything wrong, which is... Didn't commute. I mean, he was already out, so he couldn't commute the sentence.
Yeah, he controlled Hollinger International, once the world's third largest English language newspaper empire, which published the Daily Telegraph, the Sun Times, the Jerusalem Post, the National Post in Canada, most of the leading newspapers in Australia as well. Before he controversy erupted over the sale.
Why don't
of some
you,
of the
if you can, see if you can Google Board of Directors Hollinger International, because I think Jim Thompson was on that board. I'm not positive, but they owned the Sun Times. That was the demise of the Sun Times when he went to jail. And then that's when Jim Tyree and the other guys stopped it from going out of business because they didn't want Chicago to be a one newspaper town. I mean, Chicago used to be a 4-newspaper town. Do you remember the Daily News at all?
No.
So there's no way you remember the Chicago American.
No. For me, it's always been the Trib, the Sun Times, and the Daily Herald for the suburbs.
Because it was the Trib and the Sun Times in the morning. And it was the Daily News and the Chicago American in the afternoon. And the glee with which the Daily News or the American would point out errors in a story in the Trib or the Sun-Times in the morning. I mean, there was real competition. But then they also had something, talking about going back in the ways, there also was something called the City Desk, where all these guys got together and they hired, I don't know, I mean, there was a place where they, if you wanted to be all the reporters of the day, even the Mike Raycos of the world, all cut their teeth on the City Desk. If you just came out of school and wanted to be a reporter, I think they pretty much hired anybody, man. If you wanted, but you basically sat there all night, and you went out, and if there was a murder or something, and it came across the police band or something, you could scoot out and cover it, or a robbery or whatever. If there was a fire, you'd head out and you could write up the story. Now, I don't know if anybody could pick your story up, and I think they gave you a byline. And if you ended up with, you know, 10 of these articles over a 4-month period, somebody would say, hey, this Matt Weber kid's pretty good, let's hire him. And so it's one of the, that's how everybody in the paper essentially got their job, is you worked overnight on the City Desk. And so there actually was a lot of news. I mean, whatever happened to our guy who used to call in from the murder scenes? Is he still around or did he go somewhere else?
I haven't heard from him in a while. Let me look up.
I haven't seen his name, but in a byline. I bet he got hired in Washington or someplace. He was really good.
He was terrific. And now I'm drawing a blank on his name. I'll think of it in a second.
Kathy will remember, but we have it in our archives. But we had somebody who would come in from the, and he was with
the Tribune at that time.
You know what, Manny? The third or fourth time he was on, I kept saying, you're with the Tribune, and he kept saying, like, not exactly. I don't think he was salaried.
Yeah, I kind of remember that.
I don't think he was salaried. I think if he heard about a murder, he'd go out, and the Tribune was essentially, if he wrote the story, they would buy the story. I don't think he was on with full benefits or anything like that, because he kept saying
it. You might be right.
I think he was a contract guy. I wonder how many, you know this better than me, how many of the reporters in there now do you think are full-time, full-board, get-a-vacation, get-hospitalization people at either one of these places, Times or the Trib? I'm guessing it's not very many.
Yeah, I don't know the number, obviously, but I'm guessing it's gone down significantly.
What about, like, the columnist? Like the guy who does the column on the second page, tells his name, kind of conservative, but good. Good.
Have you seen how thin the Sun-Times is now?
Oh, yeah. The Tribune is. Look at the Saturday Trib. They have a nerve to charge you like a dollar for it.
It's crazy. It's like 10 pages.
Yeah. And what do they charge?
Like a dollar.
Yeah, what's the Sunday? Like $3?
Something like that.
And I mean, unless you're looking for ads in there or whatever. Plus, Audrey says the real estate ads are now so small. They went up in price, but they're so small that you can't even read them. They're at a point where you can't even get any kind of a message in there. So unless your clientele has got like a magnifying glass, she goes, she wouldn't think of putting an ad in the Tribune anymore. And that used to be, you know, a big chunk of her advertising. You know, I mean, on one hand, you make it so brutal that nobody wants it. But I have the online Tribune, and now every time I turn it on now, I pay for the online paper, and there's so many ads on the thing, I'm almost telling those guys to forget it.
By the way, the guy's name was Peter Nikias.
Yeah.
And it says he's looking for side work. Currently, he's a fellow at Neiman at Harvard. Previously, he did covered violence for the Chicago Tribune and Dark Center.
That's right. He went to Harvard. I mean, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Very cool, yeah.
But I mean, one night he called us, what, he was 3:30 in the morning. No, it wasn't 3:30. We just started the show, so it was like 6:15, and he was out like staring at a body.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That was freaky. The S&P futures up 13.50. Again, we were up more when we came in. We were trying to make back some yesterday. NASDAQ futures up 27. I hope we at least hold above zero here, or else that would be pretty ugly. But we'll tell you all about it on Tuesday. No show on Monday. Holiday on Monday. Talk to everybody on Tuesday. Have a nice weekend.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research.
Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.